Well, hello. I'd like to welcome you all again back to another session with Michael, and he's in Maui, and he's also been out to visit this object out near Saturn we've been hearing about, and on HelloEarth.info. And just before we started, we got a caller that we had last week or a couple weeks ago that stands on the line, and Michael's on the line. So let's say Michael, say hello, Michael.
Hello, Michael. Hi, Stan.
Oh, great. Okay, there's Michael. So, all right, well, we're all set, and we established that Michael can hear, or Stan can hear Michael. So that's good. So let's start where we left off, if we can. Stan, do you want to start off again?
Well, all right. Lately, I've been looking on the internet at some of these images of drones. Michael, have you seen any of these kind of images, or do you know anything about these drones that people are starting to spot around the country?
No, I've seen pictures of them, and they don't remind me of anything special that I saw. In fact, they look kind of primitive.
Really?
Yeah. I think this is my feeling, is they're made here.
Well, I feel that way, too.
I could see what looks like resistors around there. It looks like they're using some kind of charged array to get a vortex point. Once the vortex point, the craft floats up easily. But anyway, that's only my analysis on it. I don't know, really.
Yeah. Some kind of anti-gravity type of device, probably.
I think you're talking about the thing that looks like a big spider on water.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's really strange looking.
You can see some writing on some of the photographs, and
yes.
It is strange looking, but it's one of those things, unless we've seen it ourselves, it's really hard to, I mean, it looks like it's real in the sky.
Yeah. Michael, in your previous recording, am I correct in my recollection that you started having memories of this trip that you took over 30 years ago, that you started having memories of this event just within the last 6 to 8 months?
Actually, it was progressive, but the clearest details are coming up, like you're in a fog, and as you progress through the fog bank, you can see more and more as you go through it. And in my years in ministry, I was kind of kidded as being the UFO preacher, because I'd always be telling people about contact and about the nature of Nella, how much love she had, but I never described them physically or anything. So I knew about it even as even before I got into the ministry as the ordained minister of the Gospel of Jesus Christ.
When you were at this place that I think has been referred to as an architectural sphere.
Yes.
Did you, I think you mentioned, I believe, meeting some beings, celestial beings, referred to as life carriers?
Yes.
Can you describe what they look like?
Okay, I sent the picture to Curtis, and the picture of exact image of them that was carved, a sculpture, found in the my visit to London at the Victoria and Albert Museum. It's classified as Chinese and Stone Age, about 8,000 years old. And you'll see there an individual who has this extremely tall forehead. And I guess, Curtis, could you, after this, put that picture on?
Yes, I will. We'll put this on the web.
Okay, you look a bit fuzzy now.
Well, I to try and keep you guys sounding good, I turned my volume down.
Oh, I see. No wonder.
I forgot to turn it back up. But, yes, I'll get that up there
that way
real soon.
Can see. They apparently have communication, and they did. They stood in front of me, and they wanted me to see them very clearly. And about a month ago, I had I had a waking vision of them again, of one individual, and it was like a heads-up display, as if it was projected over what I could see, and became, you know, like a heads-up display. I could see this individual again with his very, very, very tall head and very human-like features. His face, if he covered his head with a hat, like similar to any tall hat, especially looks like the hat that the Pope wears or something like that, a tall hat. If he covered his head like that, he'll look normal and human. But I believe that's an order of beings, and I guess there are others there, but this one I didn't really talk to very much, but they have sent me most recently this waking vision, visual communication of them. Actually, one person came back and said he could see him and remember him really clear.
Do you recall a being that was called a secondary midware or a primary midware in this architectural sphere?
Not really. One person introduced me. The one who introduced the Urantia book to me, the one that looked real human.
Yes.
And he was surrounded by these big guys that were like, 8 feet tall, and he was surrounded by them, and he was dressed in white. He introduced the Urantia book to me, and I tried to, memorize how, I could memorize it. Later, as we, he discussed the seven psychic circles, the discussion went on, and I wanted to know who he was. And he said his name, or his who he was, and I said, "You mean like Daniel from the Lion's Den? You're like the Daniel of the Lion's Den?" He says, "No, that's not my name. That's my order. It's called Daniel. Daniel or something like that. That is the order of who I am of." You know what I'm talking about? Daniel?
I'm not sure, but I know there's different. I recall there's different orders.
It's like a teacher.
Yeah.
And he can teach you really fast. But I later found out where he was mentioned, and it was like in the Urantia book. It was like introduced. I only knew about that in the last few months. And in the chapter 52, section 7, talks about these this period of more enlightenment, I guess you might say, through these different groups of people. You know which one I'm talking about, just that?
Not at this moment.
Okay. Anyway, maybe you could find it. deeper. Well, anyway.
The Ratchet book is so deep and so profound that you can read the same section over and over and just continue to get more information out of it.
Oh, I see. Well,
when you were there, do you recall in your memory of visiting different beings that some of them seemed to be in a different type of dimension than others, like perhaps at a higher frequency or higher energy?
Well, there's something that could answer that as a visual. Essentially, if you were to look at this picture that of the blue light, Curtis put it on. You can click on that where on the site, and you get the picture of this blue light. And just about, I mean, you're already, once you're in there, you're already within a different type of dimensional area already, because I think they have a pretty good train on it. So I don't remember really seeing, let's say, being like a bright light talking to me or something like that. No, they were all beings that I could really look at and interface with, like somebody on the street, except they were not.
Would you say that some of them appeared to be more physical in appearance than others?
Yeah, they're all pretty much physical. Yeah.
Inside the architectural sphere, would you say it appeared to be mostly hollow, and that everybody, when they looked up, were actually looking towards the center of the sphere?
I'm not sure about that. I know that as I walked out to a point where they're going to take me out to it's filed in pearlescent hall of the elders, and it was you float out there on these discs. I mean, you're out way in the open. The inner part is just like, you know, huge, so wide open expanse with even clouds. I'm not sure if people are, you know, standing. My perspective was that you're sort of like a balcony, I guess you might say, looking out on a view. The feel of the gravity was, it didn't seem like I was standing on the outer hall shell and looking up for the empty space, the inner space.
Did you notice whether or not there appeared to be any natural vegetation?
Oh, yeah, there was more than natural vegetation, too. In the actual walk through the area, I noticed some plants on the side, and I took a good 2 or 3 seconds to look at them and comment on them, and they're real special. They weren't like what we have here, but actually very beautiful. A lot of this one guy that came in the Rancho book, I told you he said he was a Taino. He said how everything looked new, and then he said there was based on a crystalline type design. Everything seemed to be using the kind of nano particles, which are crystal based. Some of the stuff there was crystal based, others just normal life plants and trees.
Do you recall meeting anyone that was referred to as material sons or daughters?
Material sons or daughters.
Adam and Eve is an example. They were about 8 foot tall and had a violet hue.
Violet? What do you mean by violet?
They gave off a violet, V-I-O-L-E-N-T, the violet color. But their skin gave off an aura, kind of a violet aura,
oh,
a glow of a violet glow. And they had a real problem when they materialized on this planet in the Garden of Eden, that the people who had built the Garden of Eden for them wanted to worship them as gods, and they didn't, of course, want to do that, and so they had a problem convincing them that they were not God or gods. But the people that that this occurred about a little over 37,000 years ago, and the people that were here that built the gardens under special leadership, they over many, many years, they probably were pretty short in stature. They were probably around, average around 5 foot tall. And here come these two beings that have this beautiful violet hue, and they're about 8 foot tall, and they look like they're something straight out of heaven to them.
Oh, I see. Yeah, because, well, the ones that surrounded this one guy, he was the guy I called Dano. He was short, regular height, and the ones who surrounded him were really tall.
Yeah.
And they were humanoid, but very muscular, really big, strong-looking guys. And they seemed to want to get more and more information from him, but I don't know. I was lucky enough that he, I guess, wanted to talk to me.
It could be that they were, it could be that this place is, has a mixture of aliens that are actually physical aliens from other planets, I suppose, and celestial type beings.
Oh.
I don't know. From what you've described, it kind of makes me wonder if that's, if it was a mixture of both types of beings that are in this place.
Oh, yeah.
How many different types of beings did you see there, Michael?
Oh, lots. But the humanoid form, as far as is very, very strong. Just, but really not too many human, exact humans. Like you could see that they were humanoid, but not from Earth or Earthly. But there are a lot.
Did any of them describe themselves as star students?
Not really, but you could see that some of them surely acted like students.
Yeah.
And, oh, here it is. This is on, I just found this in the online thing. And this is this guy that I call Daniel, but he's Dano. It's in this post teacher son man. So this is talking about an epoch. So looks like we're at this epoch where the next order to arrive on the average evolutionary world are Trinity teacher sons.
Yes.
And this guy, looks like he said he was a Dano. Apparently, there's not too many of them.
Yes.
There's three of the highest and most experienced of the Supreme Order of Daniels.
Is he preparing to come here?
I don't know. He's the guy that introduced me to the Irachabo.
Okay.
And apparently, he was... He could walk this planet without any problem.
Yeah. I don't know if you've read it or not, but the Urantia book describes seven basic types of humanoids or upright bipeds. Basically, and that group of seven different types, there are one, two, and three brain creatures.
Uh-huh.
And we are considered dual brains, having a right and left hemisphere.
Right.
Did you meet, I assume that you probably met some of the different types there too.
Well, I couldn't take a, make it seem like I could see their brain, but...
No, as far as the radical changes, I mean, features that they had was radically different than us.
You saw some radically different creatures, you know, one very, gave me an impression of, you know, a knight in shining armor. He looked like a great man, it's kind of,
yeah.
But he was definitely very regal, noble in character.
Wow. Yeah.
And he wasn't, that was this, you know, exoskeletal guy.
Do you know whether or not they plan to come and visit you any time in the future, or if
their plans are their own? I mean, recently when my wife was with them a few months ago, the one being who looks or is basically tan, told her. This is not about power or control, and I chose you. You didn't choose me. So that reminds me a lot of what's going on.
Hey, your wife would like to go there like you did, or?
Doesn't really care. You know, and just like me too. You know, it was an experience, and I know a lot. I know what's going on a lot more. And the Rancho book, which is I just found basically very recently, not even a year. There's a lot of parallels. And I say, that's interesting. Especially this particular time period that we have right now.
Do you believe or do you feel as though something catastrophic is probably going to happen? Or do you have a more positive outlook for our planet?
A lot of times, one of the things I do remember is that after being with them, you can become a lot more psychic, you might say, or what the Rancho book considers the beginning of Marancho experience. You get Marancho type sight and Marancho type hearing and vision and all of that. Which really connects you back to First Larson Center, God Himself through the Creator Son, Jesus Christ. But I do feel that there is a very strong warning that they are holding back certain things. There's an impression is to do not forget that the story in the book of Revelation, my two favorite books are the Gospel of John and his Revelation, Book of Revelation. And that talks about angels, these powerful angels holding back, you know, something that might hurt the earth, you know, do not hurt the earth or the water. Until I finish sealing my servant in their forehead, until that task is done, and I kind of wonder about that because that's them coming out and choosing and looking around for these 144,000 individuals.
One thing that you'll probably learn if you continue your exploration of the Rancho book is that it will describe the Book of Revelation as we have it today as very, very fragmented and distorted, that it had been tampered with over the last 2,000 years, and that the Book of Revelation that we have today gives a completely distorted view of things. And unfortunately, the apocalyptic type of view that God is going to release Lucifer down here to terrorize us for a period of time after 1,000 years and things is based upon that a lot of those fragmentary ideas, and unfortunately has misled a lot of people.
Yeah, I did hear that. I take it insight, and I realize that the Spirit of Truth has been bestowed upon the earth, and that Holy Spirit is really the operator that unwinds truth, and it actually calls everyone back toward the Creator Son. And the Creator Son has installed that Spirit, which unwinds the mystery, so that not everybody can really understand it until it's been opened. And little bits and pieces are pointed out by the same individuals that actually the Holy Spirit and makes it come alive, actually. But it is purposefully kind of convoluted, and people can, go through a whole lot and trying to say this is exactly what's going to happen. That's what I'm my take. My take was that they're just reminded me of these events, and when I was introduced, when I looked for the powerful being or powerful force, what's under, what makes everything run, and I was introduced, and I went over there and opened up and was able to see this one unit. And I remember this was not a unit, it looked like a stomach, and it was alive, and it had changing colors in it. And I was given the name, and the name that I tried to remember it with was Frankenstein. So I try to remember it that way, but actually I found it in the Rancho book, and it's called a Frondelank.
Oh yeah.
The Frondelank is part of the circus. They're trying to make sure Earth doesn't just go out of whack right away. And it also was borrowing that architectural sphere, and it was considered a living creature, and it seemed to know I was trying to understand it. And from what I can see, one of the things that I told Curtis was interesting was the Rancho book opens up to me almost in an instant. Everything makes sense because I was there. There was a question someone asked concerning why wasn't Riley Martin introduced to the Rancho book too. Well, actually Riley Martin was introduced to the teachings of the Rancho book and was shown even mansion world, when he described the Ave, as you can see young offspring over there who were being taught anti-gravity, their different level of experience, but they have so he's actually shown some of that stuff, and it's right there. So this is trying to bring, I guess this experience I have is trying to bring more revelation even to the Rancho readers. This stuff is for real. And both the Rancho book and the Holy Bible is really filled with tools and instruments that the a reader could find and learn and walk with Christ and become, take his first step, spiritual steps here on earth through the born again experience and filling of the Holy Spirit and walking with spiritual gifts, which are, you know, gifts of the tongues, interpretation of tongues, different kinds of prophecy, and gifts of prophecy, and different power gifts like working miracles, healing, and things like that. So these things really do happen, and they really do occur, and the boat will talk about it. And the experience there tells me not only that it was real there, but it also tells me that what I see around here is real. It's a cool experience here.
Of the beings that you met at the architectural sphere, do you recall meeting any beings that might have been perceived as angelic type beings?
You mean spiritual, totally spiritual? You see right
yes, now? Yes. Or I assume they would, what, appear like a ball of light or something?
Balls of light, yeah. No. The whole experience started that way. The communication started that way here on Earth. And then after that, I entered into the real face-to-face conversation with Nella and Pan. But if you look at the experience, the picture that I allow, you know, that Curtis put on the website, it gives you an indication that you sure can look like it starts that way, because you are already communicating that way. You're already telepathically connecting with them. So it could be, you know, they are real. They have real bodies and very well, not at our level, though, much higher.
I know the Wrench book says that even angelic beings and spiritual beings have to have something to function on, have to have some sort of a sphere. They don't just float around in space.
Yes. That's true. So, yeah. Yeah, you could say that they have a base there.
Do you remember what the vessel looked like, or how it appeared to you, the vessel that took you there to Saturn?
Well, it looked like light.
Without form?
Well, it looked like a light. And that tells me that they're working with one more dimension, or at least one more. Anyway, the light carried away in a ball of light. Yeah, possibly. Was there a time when I could see it as being, yes, definitely could, you know I was in something. And yes, I was allowed to function within it, but from its appearance, it was a lot, and essentially lit up. So,
I've read it in other occurrences, you know, and stretching out for UFOs, because I saw one in the daylight, daytime, when I was about an 8-year-old boy at school. In fact, I pointed out to the teacher and the other kids, and we all watched it for a while. And it's a beautiful silver disc just hovering in the sky, and a little town off in Kansas. Right,
yeah.
School lunch period.
Yeah.
We didn't know what a UFO was back in 1951.
Oh, they were very active then.
Yeah, I found out later that's true, yeah. So, I've always known they existed, but I never said too much to people because I'd get ridiculed. But this is one of the things that motivates me to continue searching because I know that they exist. I just don't know where they come from.
Oh, well, they're there, and yeah.
Did you get any indication that there were races observing our planet from any of the beings that you visited with?
Yes, of course. It was the feeling that I got at the when I went over there. I was with Ken and Nella, you might say, as well as others. And when I went over there, there was just this large group of many people. Some seemed to be very much in charge. Others were just like students. Observers, you might say. And I think, yes, as you said, people from there come over to Earth and look at a troubled world and a troubled situation and learn from it.
There have been incidents, you know, of alien spaceships shutting down some of our nuclear silos, where we've had nuclear missiles and things, and reports that they're very, very concerned about nuclear, or preventing nuclear war. And would you say that this on Saturn is, or some kind of a headquarters for the aliens that are visiting our planet, or would you say that they're just separate from other aliens?
Because of the nature and amount of ships there, the amount of, in the landing bay is like just covered with them, and of course the one that stand out is really the really, really large one, huge one. And I would say they're all pretty much organized together. There would be like, you might say races, different individual races. Also with different ideas of what they want to learn from us.
Yes.
Our situation, according to the Urantia book, it sounds like our situation is pretty sad and pretty backward in development.
Yes.
And I kind of agree with that.
Yeah. It also says, too, that at any time, of course, the papers were given to us and published in 1955, but at the time that the papers were indicted and given to the Contact Commission, which was in the 1920s and the 1930s, it stated that, the Lucifer adjudication is about to happen, and that when it does happen, then communication between our planet, Urantia, and the rest of the universe will reopen. Not in those exact words, but essentially that's what it's saying. All spiritual communication and I assume all kinds of communication.
And I think, from what I could experience there, there is a communication circuit that they were using, and I'm familiar with. That's my specialty, telecommunications.
Uh-huh.
And these individuals, I call them the elephant men, they went behind a panel and did some kind of work and related to me, and wasn't sure what they're doing, but apparently they were getting some information and were pleased to find it. What happened, I believe, is that they have the lines there in place. Essentially, they have communication there. I think the lines of communication also are not lines of communication, but lines of energy, because I guess that Frandalov guy, just over there pumping energy, is doing a lot of other things too. And they allow me to see it. And they even give him my own name, Frankenstein, So. But it's for real happening over there. And I think when it does open up over here, it'll be almost like we can talk on the telephone like this.
And you know, I've been...
not just spiritual, because the spiritual lines of communication have been open, and especially open since Pentecost. The Comforter did come, as Christ was ascended, he gave gifts to men, and he gave, one of them was, of course, a comforter, that keeps us in tune spiritually and through spiritual circuits. But as far as these other circuits that are going to be in place, we don't have that yet. They're over there. Seen them using it. I guess that can traverse, you know, through many galaxies and nearly instantly. I think they had to wait a little while for the information. I don't know how far away that information went. It had to be retrieved from, but I know that it was a technology or some kind of technology they were using.
In my searching over the last year or two, I've ran across a lot of different places that are seeming to indicate that for whatever reasons, here our societies on this planet are just—they're on the verge. The governments, the ones who are keeping all of these things secret, are just about ready to reveal to the public about the existence of races beyond this planet, and they're getting ready. They're getting us ready right now for some sort of official announcement here in the near. Very near future now.
I mean, our world government, or
yeah, well, United States. A lot of the countries are waiting for a cue. They're trying to put pressure on the United States to release the official information and finally admit for the first time that they've known about the existence of ET. And the United States is the one that's holding them back. But France, Mexico, several other countries. Are trying to officially do it now, but they're not coming out real strong with it because they kind of look to the United States as the leader of this area. The United States government has been, I guess, holding them back, but they're about ready to, from what I hear and read. But I don't know how reliable this is, you know. But this is what
all I can say is that the experience I had is. More than just knowing that they're there,
yeah.
I interface with them. I know how communication takes place with them on a telepathic basis. You are read like a book. There's nothing you can hide from them. You just basically are. You should basically just be an open book if you want.
I wonder if I could. I mean, I've had many years of experience in the practice of meditation. I've had experience in yoga meditation and transcendental meditation. I've often wondered if I could make contact through my meditation if I were to try.
Yeah, well, I must have back then in 72, I was hearing the teaching that God was dead, you know, and essentially, and I was challenging God to make himself real, and essentially that circuit is wide open. Jesus himself said, you know, my sheep know the voice of the shepherd, they can hear me. So the book of John, the gospel according to John, opens all of that up. And I was really surprised that I'm allowed to remember all of this, because a lot of this is extra biblical, you know, not really detailed in the Bible, although hints of it are hinted in the Bible.
Yeah.
As I said, coming from the ones who have having experience with them, there's nothing wrong with using the biblical principles of prayer, meditation, and really setting your heart by. And this would be like answering also about why does Riley Martin draw these. Works of art, I guess you might say, and give them away, and he was given that title, Ticketer. When I wondered about that, I was reminded that even in the Bible there were some strange things that was used, where the Apostle Paul had handkerchiefs taken from him that just simply touched his robes, and they would take them out to people that were ill or wanted closer communion with God or something, and they would have that a point of contact and understanding that these special miracles were done, and very similar to what Riley Martin is doing in helping people open up lines of communication with the extraterrestrial.
I listened to Riley Martin's podcast, most of them, I think, and I kind of got the impression that he probably had the legitimate experience of going there, but then his memory is mixed, filtered with his, perhaps his own religious bias and mixed in with the memories. I don't know for sure.
Well, you know, it's just the same, basically the same story, different person telling it, and you'll have his viewpoint and my viewpoint, and
yeah,
maybe whoever else. There are definitely others.
We tend to filter things
through
our own precepts.
Yeah, but I'm trying to relate things as I remember them.
Yes, yeah. Your testimony seems much more valid to me than what I've heard.
I guess every person would just have to take it apart and then put it together their way.
Yeah.
So, is there anything else?
I can't think of anything at this moment. Curtis, do you have any?
Well, it's great to have you come on, Stan, because you have all these years reading the Urantia book and understanding it more than I certainly do. I just... I've only had it a short time, and when I first mentioned it to Michael about that, well, you've been reading this since you were 19 or something, or ever since you've had it. And how long have you had it, Michael? It seems like only recently it's made a lot more sense to you.
I only got about 2 months lead over you there. That's how short it is.
Yeah, well, here I am. I'm reading the foreword, and then I read it again, and I'm reading it again. And it's just hard to even get past the foreword.
Yeah. Well, don't be discouraged, because the foreword is beyond most people's complete comprehension. In fact, when the book first came out in 1955, the foundation who was financially putting forward the book after it had initially been the contact commission for the papers, offered anyone $50,000, this is back in 1955, if they could take any paragraph out of the whole book any paragraph in the book express the same ideas that's in that paragraph with less words. If anybody could find a paragraph in the whole book of 2,100 pages and express it with less words, but the same ideas in less words, they would give them $50,000.
Wow.
There have been a lot of people try, but nobody could do it.
Yes, that's, as you read that, it just is.
Well, the friend of mine who introduced me to the Urantia book, before he introduced it to me, his neighbor was a professor at Indiana University in the language department. And he loaned her the book to ask her to study it and see what she thought of it and give him her opinion. She kept it for several months, and when she returned the book to him, she said, "Where did you get this book?" And he said, "No, I got it from a friend." She said, "No, really, tell me, because this book shouldn't exist." She said that the sentence structure, the paragraph structure, the wording is too perfect. Humans could not have written it. She said, "Where did you get this book?" So, she didn't really believe him, so she ended up contacting Chicago and getting her own book. And the geology professor also had to have a copy, too, because he read some sections in there on geology. And it kind of blew his mind, too.
So that, the book sure is...
There are numerous scientific... discoveries that have been made since the book has been published that has verified what the book said but disagreed with what the book said at the time it was published. So there are some real amazing validations in the book. One specific one, for example, was the discovery of a city called Sepphoris, which was located about 12 miles from Bethlehem. And Sepphoris is buried underneath the sand and was just discovered in the 70s. And I remember reading an article in the paper that said that when they discovered this city of Sepphoris, they wondered why it wasn't included in the Bible, because it was close enough to where Jesus was raised that he surely would have visited it, and it should have been mentioned, but there was no mention of any city called Sepphoris. And so at that time, I remember I looked in the Urantia book to see if it was mentioned, and it was, and the Urantia book talks about Jesus and Joseph going to Sepphoris on occasion, because Joseph had some contracts there, and they did some shopping. There's many, many kinds of validations that have occurred over the years. Some of more scientific, like continental drift and things like that.
It's really interesting that woman said that it couldn't be written by a human being on Earth.
Yes, she was really shocked. She said that the paragraph structure, the sentence structure was too flawless. It was too... And it really disturbed her. It really shook her up. She was a professor of the linguistics department in Indiana University on campus, but she was his next door neighbor.
Mm-hmm. And what did she think of the Urantia book after she had it for a while?
I don't know. He only related that part of me, but she did say that she ended up ordering her own from Chicago. And she also told him that the professor of the geology department, she showed him the book in some parts in there about the geology, interest of the geological history of the planet. And he was very, very impressed and interested. And so he also ordered him some of them. But there are about 1 million readers on the planet, and probably about 300,000 actually are of the Jewish race that are students of the Urantia book.
Mm-hmm.
and it's now in, I think, kind of 11 languages. They're coming out with new languages here in the future to encompass all the languages so that everybody gets a chance to read it that wants to.
Wow. It's been amazing when Michael first mentioned the Urantia book and when he said that you can find a copy on Earth, you can find your own copy on Earth.
Yes. I've found in my 25 years that all the people that I've come in contact with seem to have found the Urantia book when they were ready for it. But not before.
Yes, it seems whoever I mention it to, they've never heard of it.
Yeah, most people have not. The book is designed to last for, is designed for the next 1,000 years. And we are just, it's only been in existence now for 52 years. So we are the first ones that are getting familiar with the book.
And this came from someone in Chicago who was channeled this, or?
No, this was not done through channeling. A psychiatrist by the name of Dr. Sadler, him and his wife were both doctors. He lived in the same apartment building as a patient, or a person that became his patient, that was going into a sound sleep and started talking and jerking and would stop breathing for a long period of time and having strange phenomena occurring. And his wife was very concerned about his well-being and found that Dr. Sadler lived in the same apartment building, and that's how it all started. This person that received the transmissions from the star students and the other celestial beings was not ever even conscious. So the channeling phenomena is a lot of times a psychic phenomena that is involved with the person's ego. But this person was completely unconscious. And after many, many years of investigation, Dr. Sadler and other scientists were secretly investigating this man while he was asleep. Found that they could converse with him while he was in total sleep, and they tested him to make sure that he was asleep, that he was not aware of what was going on. They have ways of testing to see if you're asleep. And in fact, the man was really—he wasn't even aware of what was going on when he would wake up the next morning. He had no idea what was going on. He was puzzled by the whole thing. He was a stockbroker. He wasn't some religious nut or anything. He was, he was just an ordinary guy. And but he was used as a vehicle. And conditions were happened to be right. But see, in the 1920s and the 1930s, where we're entering the Industrial Revolution on this planet, many people were starting to have some serious doubts about much of the things that are in the Old Testament of the Bible and the Christian religion, and there needed to be a new revelation to help continue the process of Christian teachings and Christianity and to expound upon the Bible. And in fact, there is a book called The Harmony, which is the book that cross-references from the Bible to the Urantia book. And, but there began from these scientists who continued over many years to interview this gentleman who has never been revealed, because they never wanted a human being to be involved in the process of receiving this communication. The scientists made sure that it was not, you know, some sort of a phony psychic thing or a fraud. And they took many years before they were able to determine because they were so skeptical at first. They formulated a contact commission that consisted up to about 350 people. And he challenged his group of forum, this contact forum. He said, write your questions down, the most profound questions that you have, and we will present them to this communication to find out if they know the answers. And that's how the Urantia Book came into existence. But before they did that, the communication, the voice that was spoken through this sleeping subject said that if you realized what you had here, you wouldn't be asking foolish questions. Something to that effect, not in those exact words. But that's what basically started the more serious turn into questions.
Well, this is extremely interesting, and we'll have to take this up again. We're over our hour time. And Stan, it was wonderful to have you call back in again. Thank you so much, and for bringing the Urantia book into a clear focus for a lot of us. And Michael, thank you very much. And we'll do this again next Tuesday.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Michael. Talk to you later.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.